Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for waiting. We have got Murray back after her part one went viral. I think 150,000 people have watched it, still going up. And Murray has brought Charles with her this time. And, you know, as many of you, if you've watched part one, Murray is a victim's advocate living 15 miles from one of Virginia's properties. And she had a unique insight into what had happened and the kind of news reporting and the funeral that's just happened in the media blackout in Perth. And Charles also, well, I'll let Murray and Charles come in and tell you a bit about themselves before we move on to the story. So, Murray, do you want to introduce Charles as well?
Yeah, I met Charles a few months ago, I suppose. And he has been helping us to put together some film footage. We're endeavouring to do a documentary on child trafficking and the information that's been accrued over a long period of time. Charles is an advocate in his own right. And he has been supporting people and advocating for them for many years now. So, Charles, you take over. Go on, you talk about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I got into this through the child protection system, actually, in Australia. So my stepdaughter had her children removed, and I sort of assisted her with the legal process. We got to the end of that, and just various things just didn't feel right. It just felt like there was no proper legal process. So I started investigating what was going on and connecting with a lot of people around Australia and a few overseas as well. And I found that many families were experiencing the same. So they had their children removed from them. All these fabrications about what bad parents they were made up. It went into the courts. The magistrates and judges upheld what the department said about the parents, and they inevitably lost their children until they were 18. It's actually a huge industry here in Australia, worth about $9 billion annually, or over that now. Anyway, one thing led to another, and through that, I got involved with a lot of other things like health, the prison system. I met a lot of people who were unjustly charged and convicted, and just found that the whole system is, for want of a better word, corrupt.
Mm. So my background is somewhat similar. I had a 15-year-old who was decided that she would take off, and she started to live with a member of a very high-profile bikie gang here. And she's 15. He was about 20, I think. And there was no way. There was no way anybody would help to get her back. And, you know, just cutting long story short, I'll tell them more another time because I think we want to get into the subject matter here. But, the police said they had no cause for concern for her being with this boy, even though on the computer they would have been looking at 7 violence restraining orders from other girls, drug convictions, receiving stolen goods, assault, and the police here had no concerns. The department said she's 15, she can do what she likes. So things rolled on from there, and they just rolled on into quite a saga, which, you know, I'll share with you one day. But right now we're looking at Virginia and, you know, what has happened to her, which is atrocious.
So locally there in Australia then, you messaged me that there's been some kind of media blackout on the funeral?
Well, in a way, yeah, in a way. I guess to, yeah, just to recap a little bit, we know Virginia died on the 25th of April. And from that, her family spoke out and said that, you know, she was able to fight back with Epstein. She was able to fight back with Maxwell, but she could not fight back against the domestic violence of her that came from her husband. And she was going to speak out. She had been really badly beaten up by him in January of this year. And that's when she decided that she wasn't going to stay silent anymore. She's going to speak out. However, the saga begins with the fact that even though that assault was reported to the police, they didn't charge him. They found that he had weapons that weren't properly secured, but they did not charge him with the assault. And he shoots out and he gets a violence restraining order on her before she could do so on him. So that's, you know, that's what a lot of the confusion is, that, you know, she's got this violence restraining order and she's breached it and da-da-da-da-da-da. But that was, you know, something of a ploy from the sound, it would seem. So one of the things that occurred to me the other day is in the research that I did, they stated there that she'd been married to this man for 22 years, but that the beatings, the domestic violence has started 10 years ago. And so I suddenly thought, well, what happened 10 years ago that started that ball rolling? And that becomes very interesting because it's spot on the time that she starts to speak out about Epstein and Maxwell and Prince Andrew. It's all in that time frame. And, yes, she starts taking criminal and civil action on Alan Dershowitz and Prince Andrew and also Epstein. So that's when she started to become prominent. That's when, you know, she started to be named and became a global, you know, that created global interest in Epstein. So the saga kind of went on from there. Comes about 2019. Her deposition with the civil action and the criminal action had been suppressed up until then. But then in 2019, a judge releases her deposition. And at that stage now, she's naming names, not just Epstein and Maxwell and Andrew, but associates. And as that happened, as the judge released that deposition, Epstein was found dead the next day, which is an interesting coincidence. And what is happening now is, and Trump came into office in 2025. Virginia was assaulted in 2025, January 25, same month. And, where was I getting to? Losing my track of thought. So he gets his new, ministers and so forth around him. Kash Patel, and who's the other one?
Pam Bondi.
Yeah, but then there's another one that's in charge of justice. Begins with B. Borgio, Borigio or something or other like that. Anyway, look, I can't remember what it was called, what it's called, but there is another person who is in charge of justice, I think it is. So, but anyway, both of them have come out and they have said, we definitely do not believe that Epstein, we definitely do believe Epstein suicided. And for me, all faith in this promise that everything's going to be exposed and everything's going to be, the deep state is going to be cleaned up and all the rest of it. My faith went out the window at that stage, because blind Freddie can tell that Epstein was lost his life.
Unalived, yeah.
Yeah, same difference. So, the cameras failed. The guards fell asleep. Yeah, sure, that's all mere coincidence in a person who is in high security prison cell and is a very, very high profile prisoner. It really is treating us like a brainless dummy sitting in a shop window.
Exactly. And Charles, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, okay. So with that, okay, so what ends up happening now? Yeah, okay, it is announced and it's everywhere that she has died. The police come out and say, right at the beginning, before any investigation, as it's announced that she's died, they say it's not suspicious. So let's look at what's not suspicious. One, she's been badly beaten up to a pulp in January. He's not charged. There is a bus accident, which, you know, how that plays into it, I don't know for sure. But it seems to me that when a woman has been beaten to a pulp and near death, and she's been hospitalized weeks before, that kind of creates a bit of suspicion when she's dead a few weeks later. So there's a lot of things that they're not, that don't quite add up. They have a funeral, but what is reported eventually in the paper is that the police still haven't made a police report to give to the coroner, and she's already cremated. I'm not sure if that's procedure, but that sounds a bit odd to me. It's done because he wasn't charged, there's no charges on him. Obviously, the husband has, you know, full control over the funeral arrangements, etc. So we kind of looking for, okay, what's going to happen next here in Perth? And the other interesting thing that I found was that, you know, with podcasts, with interviews, with all over the world, you know, with UK and the US, this was big news. And you and many others had invited lawyers, ex-victims and all the rest of it. And by the way, she's the third victim to die. So in all of that, you know, you think, well, in other countries, this is really big news. She's quite prominent. She's got notoriety. Here in Perth, no, not at all. The silence is deafening. So then what you do find is that I got a message through my phone saying, with a picture of the front page of the West Australian. Now, take note of the date, 25th of May. And, yes, it's on the front page, but on the online version. The newspaper, that it's all the West Australian, West Australian Online. The West Australian that's published and sent out to the public through news agents, service stations, whatever, has nothing about it, nothing. On that same day, there's nothing in the public, in the public version. That's nothing at all that whole weekend. It doesn't come into the media or into that newspaper until Monday, when it says that she was cremated days before. And that becomes a small article on page 11. So, you know, there's things that raise questions. Let's put it that way. They raise a lot of questions and it doesn't sit right.
Indeed, and you raise a lot of good points there. And, you know, from all the various interviews we've done, I think there's about a dozen people have been unalived surrounding this case now, including Jean-Luc Brunel, who went through the same fate as Jeffrey, and several survivors. The cop, Joseph Ricari at the Florida police, who told his colleagues after they raided Epstein's property that he didn't trust his superiors with what they were giving him, and he thought it was all going to be covered up. And on and on and on it goes. But Charles, what got you interested in Virginia's case, and what anomalies have you noticed?
Sean, just before we proceed, I just noticed someone posted a message before saying that her neck was broken in three places. That's a piece of information that I haven't come across yet.
I think they were talking about Jeffrey.
Ah, okay. That was Jeffrey, was it? Right.
Oh, that makes more sense. That makes more sense.
So I was doing some research today, and the Daily Mail actually published that her husband was looking after her because she'd had she sustained a broken neck in a car accident months ago. The only car accident that I'm aware of is the one that happened in March, and with everything that was reported, it wasn't severe and not enough to injure anyone. But carrying on, what got me interested in it? Look, I've been following the case for quite a few years, and I've known that various people around me actually knew Virginia. So, of course, it raised quite a bit of interest. Now, when she actually passed away on the day that I heard the news, I thought, yeah, that's so sad that she has suicided. But then everything started to unfold. And I think everything that I've learned over the years, I look at the templates, and the templates in this case seem to match other cover-ups. What I normally say is that the authorities paint a narrative. It's the narrative that they want the public to believe. And I've seen this dozens of times in dozens of cases. And they take that narrative often right through to the courts and to the point where people are often unjustly convicted. And I would say there's about 10% of the prison population in Australia at the moment that have sustained that. It's just the courts are just a process, and the police are a part of that process. It seems that if the word comes from very high up, then the police just create and follow that narrative.
That happened here with a guy called Barry Cable. A girl kept a diary, and I think there were people in the police that really wanted to charge this man, but he was a celebrity footballer. So the word came down from on high, let him go even if he confesses. She took civil action, and it was kind of like, oh, I don't know how many years later, 20 years or, you know, a lot of years later, she took civil action and he was charged and other victims came forward. But, you know, let him go even if he confesses, you know, and that became an issue or an investigation into the Royal Commission into Police Corruption. And the judge there says, oh, I don't see anything wrong, nothing to see here. So, yeah, it becomes very difficult to actually get what you could call justice, I suppose.
There's certainly no justice in Australia. Mm. Now, I would like to point out too that this is not all police. I've actually met some terrific police. I've met some terrific child protection caseworkers as well. But there's certainly a rogue element out there.
I think the other thing too that presents a problem here is that the newspaper has a monopoly. It's a total monopoly. The weekly newspaper, the Sunday paper, are all owned. That there's no other paper, and it's all owned by Kerry Stokes, who also owns Channel 7 and heaps of other things. So it's, you know, there's no competition here. It's a monopoly. So you only get what's going to go into that newspaper.
And so, I do know that journalists are told to not publish certain stories.
So one of the big questions coming in here then, Mary and Charles, is, you know, if Virginia's now being cremated, there's no exhumation or anything possible. Is it case closed? Is there no investigations ongoing?
There was no autopsy. The police, right from the word go, said no suspicious circumstances. Her father asked for an investigation. You know, so many people have come out, credible people, you know, lawyers, etc., have come out and said they don't believe it. But, you know, she was cremated so very quickly after she died that whatever, if there was any degree of investigation, it was very limited. So I think honestly the procedure is say nothing, keep it quiet, and let it be to yesterday's news, and hopefully it'll go away.
Yeah.
And who do you think the vested interests are, Murray, that are controlling this narrative?
Who do I think the vested interest is? It's very interesting that the US are reluctant to release this documentation on Epstein. That only two people, even though many have been named, only two people have been arrested. What about the rest of them? What about the rest of them? And this has been this is not recent. This is long-standing. Nobody else has been arrested, and now there's pressure on powers that be in the US and Trump, because he made a pre-election promise that he would release these files. And then in a video that I saw, he says, oh, nobody's really interested in the Epstein files. Well, that's not strictly true. We are interested in the Epstein files, and there is pressure because of that pre-election promise to say you need to release them. One of the big questions is why not? Why are you withholding them? Why are there no arrests? Why are the other people involved here being able to get away with being the perpetrators of these trafficked children, who are all children? This is a crime. It's a crime. And yet nobody's been held accountable for being the partaker in all of it. You've got Epstein, who trafficked. Yes, he organized it. Maxwell organized it. They introduced these girls to the perpetrators. But what about the perpetrators? You know, in normal circumstances, if people have sexual relations with children, they're charged. It hasn't happened. And with Kash Patel and the person, I can't even remember his name, begins with B, if they can come out and say, well, we're absolutely sure, you know, we can say categorically Epstein's basically hung himself, you know, he's suicided. And even then you've got to think, okay, where's the accountability there? Why weren't the cameras working? Obviously the prison is not functioning properly either. What about the guards that fell asleep? Were they charged? Did they lose their jobs? You know, it's just all gone poof.
Usually we see everybody get promoted in situations like this. Yes, you know, with the guards, if you go back to the history of the building from the 1970s, there was no record of two guards ever falling asleep simultaneously since that jail was started. But I don't know if I mentioned to you, Mary, last time, and perhaps Charles is unaware, that my theory was pharmacide, whereby vested interests through intermediaries, trolls, black ops, whatever, Lady Victoria Hervey, Epstein collaborators, as identified by Boys, Virginia's lawyer, that side of the equation is that they're constantly putting pressure on Virginia, stressing her out. And on the other side of it, you know, she's got some doctor, she's getting the pharmacy, the big pharma medications increased to deal with her stress. She's got this cocktail going on with her kidneys, all these different drugs. And my theory was it would come out that, you know, she was under so much stress, she took this cocktail, and it would come out in the autopsy, a complete list of all of these different drugs. But are you saying now that we will never get that information?
No, they're not saying, they are not saying who was at the farm at 10 o'clock at night and alerted the emergency services. They're not telling us that, even though there was CCTV at the farm. They are not telling us what actually killed her. They're not saying how she died. They're just not saying so. And yes, she was, look, she must have been under stress for ever since she decided she was going to come out and speak. She suffered, she really handled a lot more stress. What did she say? You know, I fought back against Epstein. I fought back about Maxwell. So she was a strong lady. She had plans. This is what the lawyers were saying. She was positive about the future. She had plans for the future. She was going to renovate. She was planning a rally of some sort. She'd also established a not-for-profit organization to support victims. This was not a lady that was going to say, I'm throwing the towel in. And not only that, she was missing her children. Well, the VRO probably was the thing that stopped her from seeing the children. She could have fought that. She was in the process of fighting that through the courts. And she would easily have proven that she's the victim, not him. And that in that instance would have got her children back. And I think, you know, she would have been fighting for that. She would have been looking to do that. She's not going to think, okay, I give up and not bother. She just was not that person.
So you've got a comment here that I think needs to be addressed, because it's kind of like putting the blame on Virginia when Virginia was brainwashed and groomed. And this person's saying she went back to Epstein time after time, year after year. If it was so bad, why would she keep going back? And you guys have got experience in people who are groomed and brainwashed. So do you guys want to explain the mechanics of that?
Well, one of the things that I would say is that she was broken as a little girl because she was abused in her own home. And the process then, she was in the streets. She was a foster child. She was spent 6 months with a guy who was arrested for trafficking children. So, you know, she had a whole life of being broken and being vulnerable. She was trapped. I mean, they were powerful people, you know, to say, okay, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to leave. Bye-bye. It's interesting to see that the time that she did leave was when she met Robert Gaufrey. She had support. She had somebody who was taking care of her. She had somewhere to go. Other than that, she did not. She had nowhere to go. It's like, how do you get away from them?
I think I can add to that too, because I've worked with a lot of women in domestic violence situations. It comes down to fear. They're so afraid that if they leave their perpetrators, that the perpetrators are going to come after them. So they need to be absolutely sure that they have safe refuge when they do actually leave. Many of them go back time after time. It's just a normal psychological process, unfortunately.
And she was very, very young.
Yeah. Now, as far as meeting her husband, that's an interesting situation I find as well. So she was in Thailand at the time and met him there. They got married 10 days afterwards. I don't know if there's any linkage to things I've experienced or observed over the years, but what I've seen is that if certain women are required to be controlled, it appears, by the state, then men are sort of put into their path. I'm told they get love bombed. So, yeah, that sort of thing. They're made to feel really good. So I just wonder if this is a similar sort of situation.
I met somebody like that as well. And they, you know, they were a victim of somebody very, very high profile. And they had a minder that lived with them. Answered the phone, couldn't get through to that person. They wanted to know who you were, what you wanted. That person definitely had a minder. So I do believe that happens.
I'll read this comment from Stuart. We're getting into Stockholm syndrome. That's where the hostages start to identify with their captors and even defend or join them. It makes no sense to someone outside that situation, but it happens. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, Stockholm syndrome is a situation where there are mixed messages. You know, we love you, we hate you. We're going to look after you, we're going to take care of you, and then the next thing you know, you're thrown into a cupboard or you're beaten up or you're severely abused. So you get those two things going at the same time, that you get the person that's taking care of you, the person that says that they care about you, is also the person who is abusing you. And it's all happening at the same time. And it's a big screw up. It just absolutely screws you up big time. The result of it is that you develop a almost obsessive connection to your abuser. There was an heiress. They found this out when they did research on an heiress, Patty Hurst. Somebody. Hurst. Yeah, Patty Hurst. She ended up being kidnapped. And then joining the gang, she picked up rifles and did the bank robberies along with them. And when she did get rescued and had to then, you know, be deprogrammed, you get people who are very, very good at it. You know, they can give you both messages at the same time.
So we've got a question from Margaret, and I'm wondering as well if you've learned anything more about the carer. Margaret wants to know, was the husband in any way related to the carer? And also there was a news story saying about he'd arranged the carer for Virginia. I don't know if that's true or not. What have you found out?
I haven't heard anything about there's been nothing, well, in the limited amount of publications that we've been allowed to see, there's nothing about the carer. She's another one, she's gone into oblivion. There's just been absolutely nothing about the carer. She's not referred to. So after the car accident and the interaction she had with the bus driver, that's all we know of her. I have heard that the husband employed her, and maybe that came about the time when she separated from him. Who knows?
Okay, so you've got a question from Deborah. Mary, do you know anything more about Virginia's family and the cremation? Who actually got her cremated?
Well, I think you just have to use logic, in that her husband is, because he's not charged, there's no allegations against him. In normal circumstances, the funeral arrangement will go to your spouse, and I would imagine that is what's happened. He hasn't spoken out at all. There's not a beep out of him in the media or in articles or on the internet, nothing. the logical thing is he was in control and he organized it. But the other really odd thing is that, yes, okay, it got a little article in the West Australian on page 11, but it also says that she was actually cremated days before that. So it's all very, very odd. It seems like it was all done in, well, it was all done in secret. And well, the other really odd thing, sorry, the real odd thing is that the police were announcing that they are in the process of writing their report to the coroner. Is that normal? Wouldn't the police have to report to the coroner before a cremation? I mean, I'm no expert. I don't know. I can't say that they which way it goes, but so that seemed odd to me.
I did a bit of research. I did a bit of research on that today, actually. So it's very interesting that the police said there was no suspicious circumstances around her passing. What happens then is that an autopsy is not required, but if there's suspicious circumstances around a death, generally the coroner will request an autopsy. So it certainly seems like a narrative in this situation.
So that, you know, the question is, can they do a funeral without a full autopsy in Australia? What's the legality of it? So you're saying that they can?
They can if there's no suspicious circumstances.
Who decides whether there's suspicious circumstances or not?
The police.
Well, obviously the police did.
And they announced that at her death, the same announcement
that on she the first died.
They announced no suspicious circumstances straight away. They hadn't even done an investigation. They hadn't talked to anybody.
Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
And as Laureen's pointed out, how much more suspicious could it have been? I mean, what's the criteria?
I'm with you, Laureen. I'm with you.
Yeah, there should have been an autopsy just all based on her name alone, indeed.
Exactly, exactly. She's had no notoriety here at all. She's had none.
So a coroner can actually order an exhumation as well if that's required. So it's interesting that she was cremated.
Oh, yeah.
So John said, the biggest horse doping involving Aga Khan was in Perth. That was suppressed and they burnt the horse's body. Wow.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Say no more.
Yeah. That's the way it works over here.
Yeah.
If she died in her home alone, that should have meant definite autopsy.
Well, how do we know whether she was alone or not? Look, it's 10 o'clock at night. It's a remote farm. It's out in the countryside. Whoever called it in had a way into the house. And obviously it's somebody that she knew. There's no reports of any break-ins or anything like that. And who was there? Who would have been there at 10 o'clock at night?
Stacey's saying the injury from the car accident would have been suspicious and could have caused the death, yet they didn't even look again.
No, they didn't.
The information we have around the car accident is that it was only a nudge and that it wasn't sufficient to cause injury.
However, the carer has actually said that she rang the bus driver told the bus driver the passenger had a black eye, and the passenger went, that Virginia was in hospital. So if it's a minor accident, just the tail light that's been smashed, how did Virginia get a black eye, according to the carer, and put into hospital? But I mean, there's a big thing about the fact that she says that she's got 4 days to live, and everybody's going, oh yeah, she's a liar, da 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 da. But there's an issue around that as well, because a family come out and say, well, probably the bus accident saved her life, because when she got to the hospital, they then were able to do an examination, found that she had a problem with her kidneys, and were able to address that problem while she was in the hospital. So they've probably said something to her like, you know, boy, we found a really serious thing to do with your kidneys, and we need to get on to that straight away. And that's how come she's got, oh, I've been told that, you know, if I don't get immediate assistance, I'm going to die. Well, yes, maybe that was the case in that circumstance, because that was actually found as a result of the bus accident.
And the you've got a few people asking about her relationship with her kids and if the kids wanted to see her or they didn't want to see her.
As far as the kids are concerned, I would say when he got a violence restraining order on himself, he probably got it on the kids as well, which is why they would not have been allowed to contact her. She does say somewhere that the children have been told lies. So I would say that that's all accumulative. She loved her children. You know, it becomes very obvious that she had a lot of love for her children.
Do we know how long she'd been kept away from her kids for?
Yeah, it would have been January. It would have been January of this year when he went in and got a VRO after beating her.
And just yeah, because that was all over the news at the time. So it was all over the news here in Perth that Virginia was attending court, or she had a court appearance. They didn't say what for, but you could tell it was a family court type incident.
And do you think the husband managed to turn the kids against her?
It's looking that way, yeah. The VRO would have been in a magistrate's court, or wouldn't it? Charles, the VRO, I think, was in Joondalup Magistrates Court, not the family court. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, the big thing here for me is, why wasn't he charged? Why wasn't he charged? You know, she's hospitalized. She's got fractured sternum or something. She's got some really serious injuries. It's reported to the police. We've got a big hoo-ha about domestic violence and women dying from domestic violence. Why did the Perth police not charge him? He had firearms. They didn't take his firearms off him. They just said, oh, naughty boy, you haven't got them stored properly.
Well, martial arts centres are hotbeds for the police coming to do their training. So perhaps there's some kind of boys club there with the cops and the martial arts connection.
I guess that, you know, that's all up for speculation. Does it link back to the Epstein files being released and victims having to be silenced? We can't actually say categorically that's happening, but it's all inferred because of the timeline.
All right, so you got a question from Agent Orange. Was she on hospice care?
When? At what stage are we talking?
That would have prior to her coming home, I guess, when she was injured.
No, she was. After the bus accident?
Yeah.
You know, after the bus accident, she was. I think she attended court after the bus accident. So, no, she was quite active. It would appear.
She was in hospital for 4 days, as far as I know, and went home straight after that.
Mm.
So Rose wants to know, if she was cremated, What can be done now to prove that she did not take her life?
The only thing you can do is look at the circumstances. And the problem here is, though, that you can raise all sorts of suspicious circumstances unless you have somebody with the guts and in a place of power to actually do a proper investigation, look into it in depth. It will all go just fizz away because nobody has the guts to come out and do a proper investigation.
Kelly wants to know, is the family court done behind closed doors in Australia?
So in Australia, we have a really funny system over here. So the child protection system, which is the state-based child removals, that's all state-based. The family court, where when you've got warring parents, that's federal. Except for Western Australia, which is very different. So Western Australia is the only state where the family court is run by the state. And someone asked before if they're closed courts. Yes, they are. However, I think the Western Australian version of the family court isn't, because I've been into that.
I've been in there too, and the public are allowed in. But we have a system here is where children that may be apprehended, they will go to what they call a children's court, which is specifically dealt with that. Not many mothers win custody back from their children in the children's court. Let's put it that way.
That's right.
Maria wants to know, do you guys think that by silencing her, the intention was to silence others?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, one of the victims come forward and said that she is now terrified for her own life. That's Juliet.
Well, we interviewed Juliet and she was living in a compound with attack dogs. In a secure compound, the attack dogs were jumping around while we were interviewing her.
Yeah, yeah. So, and she has come out publicly saying she was scared, she's now terrified. Virginia is the third one of the victims who have spoken out, who are young, have died young.
So Anna wants to know if it was called in by her stepbrothers who were at the property.
Well, because the police won't say who called it in.
Yeah.
They are, you know, refusing to release that information. So, you know, it's all up for speculation. You don't know who did it. Whoever it was at that house would have been caught on CCTV. So there's no way that the police don't know who was at that house.
So there's no, a public information request that can be done to get the information. It's completely sealed, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's done, dusted, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Because it's only the police that can do an investigation, and they made up their minds right at the word go. They weren't going to do that. They knew their reason. Yeah, they knew how she died. Well, there's no suspicious circumstances, and yet you've got all this weird stuff going on. If you have a woman beaten up to a pulp and hospitalized weeks before she dies, to me, I'm no expert, but that's a suspicious circumstance.
Definitely. So Sarah's saying, please talk about how we can help. I am desperate to get justice for Virginia and getting Prince Andrew Hill to account. What can I do? Writing to an MP?
Me, therefore, yes. Yeah, unfortunately, it does mean F4. I don't.
What can you do to help? I'll tell you what you can do to help. Keep on talking about it. Keep on spreading the word, and don't let Virginia's name die with her.
Yeah. I mean, You would think, wouldn't you, that there would be complete outrage here, that people would be demanding answers rather than just silence. But here, there's not been very much publicity about it at all. It just happens, if you happen to look at page 11 in the West Australian, you'd see anything about a funeral at all. Because the only, other than that, it did go on onto the online version. But even that, you know, here's the online version, front page of Virginia's funeral, nothing at all in the newspapers of the same date that go out to the general public. You don't get that till day later, you know, in the middle of the paper. How many people have picked up that paper? You know, it's just, the whole thing is just highly, highly sus. What we need, okay, I guess if we're going to look at what do we need, we need a program like 60 Minutes, Four Corners, the investigators, something that will come along that have got the wherewithal to do a proper investigation into this and look at all the circumstances and dig for it. What's the chances? Yeah.
But even if they do so, with the cremation now preventing us examining the body properly and finding out what substances were in a body, it's going to be really difficult, isn't it? They've made it really hard to get anywhere with this.
They have, but you've also got, and we've seen that a couple of times now, probability. Who do we see that with somewhere? A person that was convicted on the probability that it happened.
Right. Okay.
Oh yeah, that's Higgins. What's the name? Charles.
Yeah.
Brittany. Brittany Higgins. She claims that she was raped by a politician. Yeah, federal.
Allegedly by Bruce Lerman. So that particular case, that was a big case over here. So she alleged that her colleague, who was a political staffer with her, took her back to Parliament House and raped her. So that went to court. So Brittany suffered, I think, trauma and mental health issues, and the trial was stopped, I think, twice or perhaps three times. So basically Bruce Lerman was acquitted or not convicted, at least, of this. But then it went into civil court for compensation. And the judge there said that on the balance of probability, he did rape her. So basically coming to a criminal decision in a civil court.
So what ended up happening with her is that all blew up in the media. And then Bruce Lerman decided he was going to sue the journalist, he was going to sue everybody, and it all became a massive defamation case. But at the end of that defamation case, when he's trying to sue for a heap of money from the media outlet that had blown it open, I can't remember, was that the ABC? I can't remember, but anyway, and he lost it, and he lost on the grounds of probability. So that's feasible. That is feasible if you can put together enough information to say this was probable.
But it's a fairly low standard.
Amy wants to know if both you guys think Jeffrey's dead.
Ooh, that's another one, isn't it? Definitely don't think he suicided. No way in this world did he suicide. Whether he was smuggled out and is living in luxury somewhere, I would say that's not beyond the realms of possibility. Or was he killed off because he knew too much? Because it's interesting, the timing. You know, the timing is Virginia's deposition is released with his name, Maxwell's name, other people's names. That had all been kept suppressed. And then when it became public, he died the next day. So it's like as soon as that was released, as soon as the information and the names was going to be in the public arena, he's dead immediately. They are obviously, you know, there's powers that be that certainly don't want him talking or doing deals. It's a bit like the Diddy case, isn't it?
Yeah. And are you guys familiar with...
I've heard some theories that perhaps he was smuggled out and somebody else was used in his place. It's just theory to me. I think there's no proof, and I think we just have to rely on what we know already. It seems very likely that he was taken out in the jail, and particularly with the circumstances around it, he knew too much. And if he spoke about what he knew, then big names were likely to fall.
Are you familiar with the legal action that Maria Farmer has just taken?
No. What has she done?
Well, according to the latest news, on Thursday, Maria Farmer filed a lawsuit against the federal government that begins with a paragraph both familiar and chilling. For nearly a quarter of a century, Jeffrey Epstein got away with a wide-ranging sex transportation venture, in which, of course, she was one of hundreds of victims. And worse, she alleges, the high-profile financier was able to do so because the FBI, Justice Department, and United State attorney's offices failed to listen or protect his transported, SA'd, and exploited victims. She alleges that she first reported to the FBI that she was SA'd by Jeffrey and Maxwell in 1996, that she told the agents that Jeffrey had also committed multiple serious crimes against other girls and young women, including on one of her minor sisters, that Epstein had stolen and transported her across state lines, nude and partially nude pictures of both her minor sisters, and that with others, Jeffrey was producing and distributing content that could constitute CP. She alleges the FBI agent hung up on her, never followed up, left Epstein to exponentially multiply his crimes and transportation of girls and young women over the ensuing decade. And the FBI have declined the media's request for comment on the lawsuit, citing its standard practice of not commenting on litigation. So that is what's going on there.
It's public, isn't it? It's known that, yes, the victims that first went and first got him charged, it was a charade. It was complete and utter charade. He was allowed to go out of the prison every day. He was, you know, all he had to do was sleep there overnight, and that was, you know, how he fulfilled his sentence. There was all sorts of skullduggery going on there, and somebody called Alex Acosta, I think, was involved in that very heavily. And strangely enough, he ends up working for Trump. So, you know, again, it's like, where do you find any accountability? You don't. There is no accountability. These people just get away with whatever they're doing.
Yeah, they housed him in what was called the stockade, according to John Mark Duggan, who was a Florida cop who fled the country after he got in trouble with his superiors over this. And in the stockade, we were told that the deputies were just kind of bodyguarding him, you know, screening his visitors. Jeffrey was just in there calling people all around the world, including Peter Mandelson, UK politician. He was allowed in and out, and it was just a complete and utter slap on the wrist and an insult to all of the survivors. So you've got a question here. Do Mary and Charles think that Robert could have family in the police?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
So in the work that I've done, often when I advocate for a new family, I ask I ask now because it's so common. Who in the family works in government or in some form of the public service? Because what seems to happen is that if they work in child protection or the police or whatever, they get favourable treatment. It's almost like even if they're not direct relatives, there's situations where it's all manipulated against them. And that happens so regularly. So, look, if he does have family in the police, it would explain why things have gone the way that they have. But I did a bit of research on him too, and there's not much out there about him. It was really difficult to even find his birth date. There's nothing about his family, his parents. I couldn't find anything on siblings. He's very much a mystery person.
Anything to add?
Yeah, Sean, have you watched a podcast by a guy called
Francis?
Francis, that's the one. He's come out. He's done a podcast that said he was in that cell that Epstein had, and he's come out categorically, emphatically saying there was no way he could have hung himself. And he was
Francis is a friend of mine. He's an absolute gentleman, and I would say that is extremely accurate what he's saying, because other people who've been in that jail, some of whom we've had on the channel as well, Ori Spado is one who spoke out about this. I think Johnny Lee has spoke out about this as well, and they're just ridiculing us. These authorities telling us this was, he did this to himself. They're just making fun of us because, we're not that stupid.
Well, they are. They're treating us like dummies. They really are treating us like dummies, brainless dummies. And it does, you had hopes with all the promises that, things were going to change, the cover-up gone, the exposure there, everything's going to be out there and accountable and transparent. And with what they've come out with now, I'd say nothing's going to change. It's the same old story. It's just all rhetoric. It's all mouth. It's no action.
Trevor's got a question for you guys. Do you believe that we are witnessing what is the elite simply moving narratives in order to conceal the actual multi-layered truth regarding Jeffrey and Virginia?
Oh, spot on. Absolutely. Yes, totally. Yep.
What about you, Charles?
How about you, Charles?
Yeah, if they can do it for, not necessarily the elites, but certainly the public service can do it for average, everyday Australians, they are quite capable of doing it for anybody else who they want to.
Indeed.
Well, there's another thing here. I've been watching the Diddy thing very closely, the Diddy trial and the witnesses. It's horrific what's coming out of that. But also, apparently, I'm understanding that there's a girl called Ali Carter who was subpoenaed as a witness who has gone missing. Nobody knows where she is.
Wow.
But in her podcast, she has come out swinging, saying that children were involved in these, that there were ritualistic, horrible things happening with young children being fed to these freak parties. And she actually says from child protection, she herself was in a container with children that were transported. Her story is absolutely horrific, but it's focused on children being trafficked into what was going on in these freak shows, and she's quite explicit about that, and it's horrific. It's horrendous. A lot of these kids don't come out from these freak shows. And she's missing.
So Laureen wants to know, how did we, the public, lose our rights to see what's public or to speak freely publicly?
How do we lose our rights? We voted in people who dictate. We no longer have any say. They don't hold referendums to change major legislations. They just do it. It's not constitutional. It's not legal, but they do it. So really, it's a totalitarian dictatorship that we call government.
It's actually a big question to answer because it's so multi-layered. It would take a whole, probably several episodes to go through all the different layers.
Yeah. You got a question from...
Sorry, my question here is, how come we're hearing about big celebrities with the Diddy thing, and we're hearing about adolescents and starry-eyed people who want to become famous? They haven't introduced children, young children, in these freak-offs. That's not there yet. And the only person that was ready to talk about that is gone, is missing. It's huge, Sean. It's huge, like Charles was saying. You know, it's a massive network. It's like a spider web.
So you're getting asked how many kids go missing a year, every year?
I can't say categorically, but I think there are millions.
Oh, my God. I just put it into Google. You know what it says? 8 million?
That's it.
Go missing worldwide every year.
Yeah.
Most are found quickly, but some disappear for months or even years. What?
Yeah.
So in the US, 2,300 children are reported missing daily. Oh, my God. Let me have a look what it is for Australia. In Australia, saying here for Australia, it is 37,000 children were reported missing in Australia. Most are found safely within 24 hours, but hundreds of families are still searching for their missing loved ones. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, without going into detail, child protection. Have you ever seen anything from Nancy, what's the last name, Charles, what's
Schaefer,
her name?
Nancy Schaefer.
She was a senator in America, and she got up and she said, child protection is the greatest trafficker of children of all time.
Yep.
She died. She got shot, and her husband got shot. And guess what? Guess what? Can you guess? It's a suicide. It's a murder-suicide.
Of course.
Which is a load of bunkum. If you go into it, the gun was not her husband's gun. There's all sorts of details there that say that this was just contrived. It was a murder.
The United Nations as well is one of the biggest perpetrators. I'm just looking at the UK. So if Australia, 37,000 go missing. In the UK, it's 75,000 with 216,000 separate missing incidents reports because of children going missing multiple times. Looked after children are particularly at risk, with 1 in 10 being reported missing compared to 1 in 200 if they're not in care. So, yes, it's the care kids that the predators really prey on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, separating the kids from the children, from the parents, leave them, you know, con blanche. But, go on, sorry.
You guys have, you've answered all the questions. You've generously spent over an hour with us. Is there anything you guys would like to say in conclusion?
Can I go first?
Yes.
I would like to say in conclusion, I am not suicidal. I am not accident prone, and I'm very healthy. How about you, Charles?
Yep, I'm the same. And I want to see justice for all the people out there, particularly in Australia, who are suffering under the narratives of the public service.
Appreciate that. All right, viewers, let us know what you think about this in the comments. I'm going to let you guys go and I will close the show. So thanks for coming on. If there's any updates, you keep us posted and we would love to get you back. Take care.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
See ya.
Phenomenal guests again, folks. So on point, you know, we've got to keep this torch going for Virginia because that is what she would have wanted. We know from her diary notes about her activism, and we've not got to let this lie because the mainstream media don't want us talking about it. The vested interests don't want us talking about it. The Queen's favorite son certainly doesn't want us talking about it. So continue to talk about it. We do. And just to let you guys know what else is coming up today, we have got Zachary King coming on at 8, and he's exposing elite, kind of ties into what we spoke about today. He's also exposing Bohemian Grove, and he's doing it from the perspective of an insider. He's a former satanic high wizard, used to be part of the elites, and he used to visit places like Bohemian Grove, and he's going to share his unfiltered story and expose the secrets of these elite groups that he used to be a part of. And then we have possibly, I'm speaking to her right now, got Barbara Boyd coming on tomorrow to speak about geopolitics and the blood sacrifice of the Ukrainian people and the Russians, all who are tragically dying in this war that's being fermented by the globalists. They just sit on the sidelines, licking their lips, making money while all these young people die. It's absolutely disgusting. So hopefully we've got Barbara Boyd coming on the channel for the first time tomorrow. And we have got the Starmer alleged male model / rent boy case is going to blow up in the news again on Friday because they're going to court. And we had Kit Clarenberg come on talking about this case. He's done fantastic research. And we've got it tentatively set up for 4 p.m. on Friday because we know the court hearing should be in the news by then. But we could move that even earlier. He's on standby. So that one's called Starmer's Alleged Male Escort in Court with Kit Clarenberg Part 2. So look out for that one on Friday, folks. Lots of more great content coming up, and we will get more lined up in the meantime. So thanks for tuning in.